Good evening and welcome to Current State on 90.5 WKAR. We are live this evening from Adams Field, Michigan State University, for a special edition of Current State. Tonight is the beginning of another football season for the MSU Spartans. We are 2 hours from kickoff, as you heard a moment ago. We're marking the occasion by teaming up with WKAR's current sports host, Al Martin, and his team for a joint broadcast that focuses on the Spartan football team, the game, and a few other things that are closely associated with a game day here in East Lansing. Al, I'm looking forward to this hour. In my own view, every home football game is intense, but there's nothing quite like that sunny, warm, sometimes steamy season opener. Today is one of those days.
Yes, and steamy in the literal sense. I tell you, it's about 90 degrees out here. But like you said, Mark, this is the very first home game of the season. And I tell you, for sports media like me, we've been sitting around all summer waiting for this moment right here. It has finally come. The birds are chirping. The people are out. It's a great atmosphere. I can't wait to get this baby started, I tell you.
Fortunately, we've got a nice little breeze here. We've been energized by the Spartan Marching Band, whose drum section passed through just a moment ago. Adams Field, of course, has a long history associated with the band. The band regularly has practiced here for many, many years. And as everybody in East Lansing knows, the Spartan football season involves a lot more than football. The marching band is one of the proudest symbols of Michigan State. Here to share more about all things Spartan Marching Band, it's director John T. Madden. John, good to see you.
Good to see you, Mark and Al. Thanks for having us.
I stood in my driveway 10 or 12 days ago, and I had the most compelling sound of August that I hear every year, not too many miles away from the MSU campus, and the sounds of the drum section just came percolating through the air, and I always smile when I hear it. You must hear that all the time, don't you?
Yeah, drums in the distance. I'll see people around town in the summer, and they say, well, when's the band going to start up? And I will say, on August 17th, you'll hear drums in the distance. You hear that distinctive sound. You know it's right around the corner.
Yeah.
Of course, the drum line, they sort of retool a day or two before everybody else. But yeah, that is a distinctive sound of fall at Michigan State.
Well, it's kind of like the pitchers and catchers reporting early to Tigers spring training camp in Lakeland, right? The
Absolutely.
Drum section's got to get everybody organized.
Yeah, they got to do eight on a hand and all the exercises and get the drums tuned up, and it's a great sound.
Besides being so much warmer, and you are dressed down. I'm relieved to tell everybody you're not in your full dress garb here yet. But besides being warmer, how is opening day at home different from the others?
Well, you know, I think our day is dedicated. Preseason, which is just finished, you know, right before school started, is about a 10-day camp. And each year, new members join the band based on how many openings or vacancies are created through graduation and this kind of thing. So the first game is 80 people going through the routine for the first time. So no matter how well prepared we are, we're going to see some wide-eyed freshmen march through that tunnel, march down that field. You know, there's just nothing you can do to prepare them except have them put blinders on and learn the art of concentration and focus and get them through this first game. But every Spartan Marching Band member has experienced the first game.
Baptism under fire.
Yeah, very, very true. Very true.
And I'm sure it's that way for a freshman athlete, too. Our guys are trained well, and we have had exhaustive rehearsals, and we're in really good shape. The band's going to be stunning, but we're going to get those 80 kids through it and get them through their first home game.
Now, John, I got to ask you, when you talk about the band of a college football team or just a college team in general, you guys essentially are part of the team. Can you talk about the connection that you guys share with the team and your view on that angle?
Yeah, I think that's something we sure live large in at Michigan State. Our teams and our bands, our athletic bands, they really connect. And specifically with football, the Spartan Marching Band invites Coach D'Antonio over. He brings his Eagles, his captains, his Unity Council, the players who are peers with our students. You know, they meet each other and they talk, and the coach will talk to the band like they're a team. I mean, coach speak comes out when he comes and talks to the band. And I guess I have my own kind of coach speak, but I'm a conductor, I'm a band director, so it's a different kind of talk. But those exercises show the students something I promised them, which is, without this football team, there is no band. I mean, we're here to talk you know, we're here to play for our team. So coach knows that, and we have a great synergy between football and Spartan marching band.
You alluded to the freshmen a minute ago, John. How many are in the band, and how many total members are in the band? Remind our listeners.
300 exactly. 300 students, and there are just under 80 freshmen. I think we have 78 freshmen in the band this year.
Were you in the marching band?
I was a trumpet player from 1981 to 1984. Marched 4 years in the band.
Still remember your first performance?
Yeah. You know, it was a game in the rain, and it was against Bowling Green State. I don't remember the score, but I remember it rained so bad, but that didn't bother me at all because I got to wear that uniform and sit in Spartan Stadium. And Muddy Waters was the coach, God bless him, and it was a day I'll never forget. But, you know, we get to do that every year. We get to take our new kids into this environment, and I call it this long green line of tradition that we have established with our band alumni, and, you know, goes back a long time.
There is a first this year for the Spartan Marching Band, the band's first international member. Tell us a little bit about Louis Han.
Well, Louis Han is a junior. He's from China, and you're going to meet him in a minute. And I met Louis during his freshman year 2 years ago as a student just sitting up in the bleachers watching rehearsal. And he met me after rehearsal and introduced himself. He was a terrifically polite kid, and he came up and I said, "Where are you from?" And we talked about China, and we talked about his marching band experience in China. He plays in a kind of an indoor marching band in China, and there's a whole culture of marching bands there. And Louis was pretty much a regular at rehearsal, and he auditioned once, didn't make it, and he had a successful audition this year. Louis turned down an RA gig. That's how terrific a student he is. He was named an RA, and he turned that gig down because of the time commitment of Spartan Marching Band. And here's Louis from China standing here in his crisp green and white Spartan Marching Band uniform, and we couldn't be more proud.
Well, let's get to know Louis Han just a little bit. Welcome to East Lansing. Well, you've been in East Lansing for a while here.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Spartan Marching Band,
Thank you.
How does it feel to be just an hour or so ahead of your first performance in Spartan Stadium?
I am sweating, but exciting at the same time, and it's really a good chance like to perform with all those great members in the band. And I just can't imagine like this is true. I don't know how to explain that. But
when you try to explain this to your family and friends in Shanghai, right?
Yeah.
How do you describe it?
I said I made it to the toughest band in the nation.
The toughest band in the nation.
Toughest band.
Okay.
Yep.
You got to say that when the director is around, right?
You got to.
Yeah. Yep, but I just love Spartan Marching Band.
Tell us about the 2 years that you've been here. You're a junior now, but John, is that common for an upperclassman?
Oh, sure, yeah. Freshmen, first year members of the band are not exclusively first year students at Michigan State. We've had fourth and fifth year students join the band for their first time. Some people don't make it right away. Some people audition a couple times. Some people just choose not to try to audition until they've got on in their career a little bit, so. Yeah, very common.
Now, Louis, I gotta ask you. Now, you said you tried out for the first time, didn't make the squad, but decided to come back. I mean, was your passion just that strong that you wanted to come back and try this? You were going to be a part of this team one way or another, right?
Yes, and I really want to stand like the really good performers, like stand right next to them and play in the stadium. And I think it's all about to stand the people right next to you. So, yeah.
Did your trombone playing get better between your first audition and your second audition then?
Yeah.
It sounds like it did.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Basically, I practice every day in the music building. And at the same time, I can see a lot of people like come in and come out, practice their instruments. And lots of them are trying out for the marching band this year too. And it was a really good honor to get here. So.
John described your experience back home in the arena band, like an indoor marching band is what it, on what occasions does an arena band in China perform?
Basically once a year.
It's just a public performance?
It's not like a competition, like indoor competition, but we basically just perform one show a year. So we don't get a lot of time to practice. Or not doing like practice every day. We practice probably once a week, But we just spend a whole year on one competition show.
So. But do you do routines then? You do patterns and things like that?
Yes, we do a lot of patterns. We do three songs as well. But we just basically, we don't have that much chance to play in China.
Louis, I got to ask you, how is the camaraderie? Because, like I said, I equate a situation like this. When you talk about the band of a school, you guys got to be pretty close. I mean, talk about the camaraderie that you know, coming to Michigan State share with your other bandmates.
It's a long way home right here, but I think I got a new family here with my trombone sections. They're great peoples, and we play together. It feels like a family, and we're bonded. We are, you watch everybody's back, and... it's the best family bounding right here. So,
we got three members of the trombone section here watching you endure your first radio interview. So they can actually witness this thing. What are you studying, Louis?
I'm a supply chain management major.
Okay.
Yep.
In East Lansing, we have noticed such an influx, so many greater numbers of Chinese students. What has that been like from your perspective, to have so many other fellow Chinese students here in East Lansing?
I feel like more people love to come to America is because we have better education here, probably. And I think it's more like, it's like perspectively, it's just more, I don't know how to explain that, but
it's got to make you feel more comfortable, right, being here?
Yes. I feel it's more comfortable to get along with people. People smile to you at the street. They talk to you. They don't really come in China. Probably just people just walk around and don't even smile. But right here, you made a lot of friends. And, you know, it's all about to see the world. People want to see the world. That's why we're here.
I'm curious if you feel confident about tonight's routines. Have you got them all committed to memory, or are there some parts that are just a little, you're a little less certain of? I remember.
He better have them committed to memory.
There's only one answer to that question.
We tried really hard. We pushed ourselves to the cliff. So, yes, we will do good tonight.
We certainly want you to enjoy your Spartan marching band experience to the max, but I have to ask you what your plans are after graduation. Have you thought about that?
Probably I'll say I'll stay here finding a job, but I will definitely come around back to Michigan State, and I will just keep watching the bands going. It's a great chance, like great opportunity to see them growing.
I was watching the Spartan Marching Band is one of East Lansing's biggest spectator sports.
Yes.
I swear.
Yes.
It really is.
Yes, it is. And I tell you what, guys, I mean, kickoff is at 8 p.m. I know you guys are certainly excited, not because you're only, you know, playing in it, but you get to see the action. I want to get a score prediction from you guys. I'm assuming both of you guys are going to choose Michigan State to win. Give me a score prediction from both of you guys.
Okay, I think Maxwell lights it up tonight. His receivers are going to catch the ball.
Okay. We had 66 drop passes last year.
Yeah, no, they're going to catch the ball. And the defense is stout. So I think Western Michigan's going to have a tough time against our defense. So I'm going to say Spartans 34, Western Michigan 3.
Wow. Just a blowout. Just not even close.
Yeah, comfortable blowout.
What about you, Louis?
34-0.
Oh, man, he's going really big. All right, 34-0. Man, all right, we'll see.
What kind of halftime show?
It's a fun show. It's really fun. We call it State of Michigan Rock. So every artist is,
Nugent,
a Michigander.
Seeger.
We left Nugent out.
Oh, okay.
I've done that before. Ted's great, but we left Cat Scratch Fever out. We got Seeger. We got Grand Funk Railroad. We have Eminem. Kid Rock.
Eminem?
Yeah,
oh,
man,
I will be there at halftime.
Yeah.
I'm watching that one. All right.
Kid Rock and Stevie Wonder.
Okay.
Man.
Sounds fantastic.
Okay.
And how many separate times does the band perform on a typical game day? You've got before the game, you've got once the game starts.
Yeah, I think, Mark, I figured it out to be like 9 events. We do a warm-up here on Adams Field. We march to the stadium. We do the pregame show. Everything we do in the stands is a performance. We come out on the field for halftime. We keep rocking and rolling in the stands. We do a post-game show on the field in the stadium. We march back to Demhall Field, and we have sort of a dismissal routine. I mean, there are many, many times during the game day that we're performing.
Where do the ideas for the routines come from, and who choreographs all that?
Well, staff and I kind of form show planning committees, and the two directors, myself and Cormac Cannon, we write drill, we write arrangements. Our grad students help us with that. But by and large, that's our job. And student committees are formed to pick tunes and create ideas for shows and create a variety in the spectrum of, you know, what I think our fans like. I don't think everybody wants to hear a rock show. Some people may want to hear a Broadway show, and other people may like marches, and other people like nostalgic things. So we have a spectrum.
Louis, what was it like not making the band that first time? Was that a real major disappointment for you?
It was really I was really disappointed, but I realized that I needed to do better because I didn't make it because I'm not that good at that time. I was not that good at that time. So I just pushed myself, and I say, yeah, this year, probably I'll make it next year. So
you must have been over the moon when you found out you made it the second time.
Yeah, I was jumping over, I don't know, my neighbors. They probably will hear my screaming yelling, but yeah.
You have to let down some kids every year.
That is a tough part of your job,
I would
say. You know, there are 100 kids out there that didn't make it, and many of those kids are good enough to be in the band. But I think that's one of the things that the Spartan Marching Band is proud of, is that it's an elite ensemble. And to make it, you've got to be really terrific, and it's hard to turn them down, but it is part of the gig.
How many kids do you audition every year, then?
Well, we take about one out of two, so, you know, literally 50% don't make it, and we did turn away another 80 kids, so we had 160 kids audition for 80 spots.
Well, this has been really special. Some of my sweetest memories as an undergrad at Michigan State were right on this field, watching a predecessor of yours, Ken Bloomquist,
absolutely,
and Dave Catron, go through the
teachers.
Routines with the Spartan Marching Band. Right. It's been very special to have both of you here today. Louis Hahn, best of luck to you.
Thank you.
And John Madden, break a leg, and we'll see you in your
always a pleasure.
Full
Thanks, guys.
Dress regalia coming up in a
Sounds
little bit.
Good.
John T. Madden, the director of the estimable Spartan Marching Band here in East Lansing. As we take a look at we got a little bit of a crowd here.
Yes,
Al Martin.
We have a crowd that has surrounded the tent. Are you guys excited? You guys ready? Yeah, give me some noise, man. We are kickoff is at 8 p.m. Michigan State and Western Michigan. I'm certainly excited. For us sports media, we've been waiting for this all summer. We've been kind of bored, Mark, to tell you the truth. I'm ready for this. I am ready for this. I'm sure you are, too.
Yeah, though there is nothing like the first home game. Amid the spectacle of a game here at Spartan Stadium, one segment always stands out. Another performance by Zeke the Wonder Dog. The dog that former MSU head coach Daryl Rogers called the best receiver in the Big Ten. And he is primed for another season here. And I'm afraid Zeke and my microphone cord are getting
Zeke's ready to play
intimately
right now.
Acquainted here, as it turns out. We welcome Zeke's handler, John Foley of Holland, Michigan, to Current State. Hi, John.
Jim.
Jim, I beg your pardon,
oh, that's
Jim.
Okay.
Nice to have you here.
Well, it's great to be here tonight. This is going to be a wonderful night to play football. It's been a long summer, and I can hardly wait for the season to begin.
And for all of those unfortunate folks who have never had the occasion to see Zeke the Wonder Dog do his thing, describe Zeke's talents for us here.
Well, Zeke is a freestyle frisbee dog. He's a high-flying dog. He gets about seven and a half feet in the air. He likes to just fly. He's fast. He's as fast as any Zeke has been, and I've been blessed to have him. He's a yellow lab, and he's actually well-bred. He came out of Lumac, and he came out of Indian Blackfoot, two of the biggest national champion hunting dogs there could be. He came out of some great lines. So he's a very well-bred hunting dog.
And he grabbed some major air, I guess. How far off the ground can Zeke get?
Well, he'll get 7 feet in the air, seven and a half feet in the air.
My gosh. And, wow. and as you alluded to a minute ago, this is not the first Zeke. We got Zeke the first, Zeke the second, and we're on Zeke the third here right now. Have you been the handler for all of the Zekes, all of the Wonder Dogs?
This is my wife and I's second generation. We had Zeke 2 and Zeke 3. However, there were 4 Zekes. There was Zeke 1, Then there was Kesey, and then there was Zeke 2 and Zeke 3. That's how it began.
I think he didn't like the way you pronounced his name. I think it's really what it boiled down to there.
Well, it's funny how we use Zeke. We use Zeke as a call name on the football field for the football games, but I use Buku as his name for his call name.
Where did that come about?
Because when I saw this pup, he had Buku energy and he was tearing up the field.
He looked like
a banshee. It was between Buku or a banshee. And I said Buku sounds better.
Jim, I gotta ask you, when you talk about, because this is not the first Zeke, as Mark just alluded to. What goes into picking Zeke? What qualifications does Zeke have in order to be Zeke?
Well, on Zeke 2, I looked at over 600 dogs before I picked out a hunting dog that I wanted to take out and play Frisbee with. And then the intention wasn't even to take him out to play Frisbee. I was looking for a good family pet, and we came up with Zeke 2 out of the Humane Society. He was a rescue. And I was looking for a lean belly.
Okay.
With a medium-sized chest, with a good-looking head, and he was tight. And Zeke 2 met that criteria, and we went out to Tunnel Park, and we were out to Tunnel Park by Lake Michigan in the snow in the spring, and he went out and he dug us an orange Frisbee out of the snow and brought it back, and I threw it. He didn't catch it, but it was started something there. And then they were looking for a new Zeke, and by that time we were doing freestyle and we were competing on a national level, and it all fell into place with Zeke 2. Now Zeke 3, I was looking for a little stronger breeding because Zeke 2 broke down on me with that knee, when he had to have that knee surgery. It was a genetic breakdown. So, you know, I wanted to go with a little bit better breeding this time to make sure I didn't have that happen to me again. So this dog, Zeke 3, is all certified everything. He's like, he's going to hold up, and he's much more solid.
Now, I'm a dog owner, and we love our dog, but she could no sooner perform like Zeke than perform brain surgery. How much work or training, how many hours does it take to get a dog up to the speed of performing in Spartan Stadium?
Well, let's just say this. After the football season ended last winter, we never stopped practicing.
Yeah.
We've been practicing 3 to 5 days a week minimum every week since last football season ended.
And how many hours per session?
Well, I run them, well, in the wintertime, I can run them a little harder. I can run them like 35, 40 minutes hard. And then, you know, I do that 4 or 5 times a week. And in the summertime, he runs 2 times, 15 minutes a day. And I put him through his paces a couple times a day, 5 times a week. Plus, he goes swimming. And, of course, he goes to tailgate parties. Funny thing about that, though, the first year I ran Zeke 2, we took him in to all the tailgate parties, and I let everybody feed him. Well, come basketball season, that dog wasn't no 62 pounds. I put him on a scale after he couldn't jump, and that boy was up to 84 pounds.
Whoa, my goodness.
So I had to put him on a diet after football season.
We had to
season.
Run a few lines over at Breslin Center, is that right?
He did some, yes.
What's your typical game day routine as far as keeping Zeke under control and getting him to the stadium?
Well, I like to, like on a hot, hot day like this, and it's hot and humid, what he's going to be doing is setting in air conditioning until halftime. Normally, I like to take him around with the crowds before the games, but in this kind of heat today, I pretty much have to keep him focused because he's going to want to run around and visit with everybody, and he'll forget what he's here for. So Zeke has to be very focused this evening.
Has he ever just failed to perform for some strange reason?
Any drop passes?
I hate to bring up an unpleasant memory.
Well, last season, on the opening game, we could not get him to catch a Frisbee before halftime. I couldn't.
When was this?
Last season.
Last season? Oh, that sounds familiar.
And I stepped out on the field with Zeke, and he wouldn't catch a Frisbee. And I stepped up there on the line, and I'm like, you son of a gun, you better go. And he went out, and he caught about 6 Frisbees. But he was so interested in the band, he charged all the way in after he caught a 50-yarder, and he went right into the band to get loved up and get his apples. Because he gets an apple after every performance.
We're talking with Jim Foley of Holland, Michigan, who's the owner and caretaker for Zeke the Wonder Dog. Zeke's all over social media here, being the thoroughly modern dog that he is. Tell us about Zeke online.
Well, MSU Zeke on Facebook is his Facebook page. If you go to ZekeTheWonderDog.com, you can find his webpage, and it's got a direct link to it. And I've done a timeline of all the Zekes I could get, everything I could get together on them in a regular timeline. And it pretty much defines what Zeke is all about.
Jim, does Zeke tweet? Does he tweet with his paws?
I have a tweet account, yeah. And yes, Zeke does have a tweet account. And you'd be surprised some of the players that are on there from the past. It's pretty amazing who's tweeting to Zeke.
Well, it's been good fun. Jim Foley of Holland, Michigan, the owner of Zeke the Wonder Dog, who you'll see at halftime here today if we don't overstimulate this poor animal by his appearance on the radio here today. Oh, as if on cue. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Thanks
very
a lot,
much.
Jim. Have a great
it's a real pleasure.
Jim Foley of Holland, Michigan. Current State, along with Current Sports, Al Martin, live from Adams Field here in East Lansing, where we are celebrating the opening of the Spartan football season. A lot of electricity in the air here today. The temperature reached the mid to upper 80s. We've got a few clouds moving through now, and we've got some Spartan saxophonists here who are practicing their marching right in front of us. And we're glad you're along here with us. Current State on WKAR.
Yes, they are certainly warming up, Mark. The atmosphere is set. The tone is set. I can't wait for kickoff. Well, right now, we're going to talk some X's and O's. I'm standing here next to Brian Calloway, sports reporter with the Lansing State Journal. Brian, how you doing, first of all, man? You excited?
Oh, yeah. Looking forward to seeing what this team is made of. So, yeah, very excited.
Definitely. So, first of all, let's go back a few days. Let's go back to the beginning of this week. When Mark D'Antonio, we were both at the press conference, Mark D'Antonio goes to the podium. Everyone is on the edge of their seat waiting to hear who he's going to name as the starting quarterback. First of all, I want to get your thoughts. Did you think, just your personal opinion here, who do you think was going to be the starting quarterback?
Oh, I actually thought there was going to be Maxwell coming in just because, it just seemed like the obvious and logical choice just based on the experience that he had last year. Started all 13 games, so he had that experience under his belt. So it just seemed like the logical choice, especially if everything else was equal in the competition and, all the options were equal. You might as well go with the person that had the experience to kind of start off the season.
Now, I tell you what, it's hard to ignore the play of Damian Terry in that scrimmage. The man had 240 yards, 40 on the ground. Three touchdown passes. He was great. Looking at this right now, do you think that Andrew Maxwell will be the starting QB as the season rolls on?
Well, a lot will depend on what kind of unfolds in these first three games. Obviously tonight we're going to get a look at Connor Cook. Possibly could see Tyler O'Connor out there tonight. So I think it's going to be something that will unfold throughout these first three games of the season. And I think that Notre Dame game will be a telltale sign as to his stature as this team's leader in the offense.
It's going to be very interesting, to say the least. So, let's talk about today's game, the season opener, Michigan State versus Western Michigan University. Again, kickoff is at 8 p.m. Brian, if you look at the history between these two teams, there's no question MSU has certainly dominated. Michigan State leads the all-time series 10-2. What's your prediction for the game today?
Well, I don't think the game's going to be close at all. Just Western Michigan, they had a guy, Jamie Wilson, their starting receiver last year, was the MAC Freshman of the Year. And he's out the first 8 weeks of the season with an injury. They also lost their most experienced offensive lineman, Davison. He had the most starts under the belt for that team, so he's out as well, too. They're just very thin on the offensive and defensive lines, and you kind of need to have the depth there in a game like this when you're kind of the underdog. So I definitely don't see this game being close at all.
Once we get, you got a score prediction for me?
Yeah, I think it's what I predicted in today's LSJ. It was about 34-6 or something like that. So
everybody is in love with the number 34, I tell you. We had 34-0 with Louis Hine here, and we had John T. Madden saying 34-3. Maybe I should have changed my prediction to 34-something, right?
Yeah. It's the key number right there.
It is. Now, Brian, I want to talk about something else. Now, there's another aspect I think has gotten, just shoved under the rug a little bit. Even though there's been a lot of talk about the QB battle with Andrew Maxwell, Connor Cook, etc., Damian Terry, of course, as we just talked about. But I tell you what, that tailback battle has certainly been something interesting. That's kind of gone, just like I said, under the rug. talk about that. What is your opinion about that tailback?
Yeah, you're definitely right about that. I mean, so much attention all offseason was kind of played on like what quarterback would be under center when the season started. But you're right. I mean, obviously Michigan State has to replace a very strong running back, and what Le'Veon Bell did for this team was very special, and he carried this offense. So it's a very interesting situation. As we know, Jeremy Langford will be getting to start tonight, but expect to see Riley Bulla, Nick Hill in there, and it'll be interesting whether Delton Williams and Gerald Holmes, the two freshmen they brought in, will get carries at all. I mean, D'Antonio wasn't quite sure about that on Tuesday, so kind of depend on how this game plays out. But the thing that's interesting about the running back situation is Delton Williams came in as an athlete. His future seems to be on the defensive side, but he's still over there on offense as a running back. So that could be a telltale sign that, you know, maybe he could help this team this year as a running back.
Let's be good hosts here for 1 second, Brian, and acknowledge this Western Michigan team. There are a few Broncos here circulating true. Among us here at Adams Field, but it's a serious in Kalamazoo they're in a pretty serious rebuilding mode, correct?
Oh, yeah, definitely, and they brought a new coach in, P.J. Fleck, who seems like a very energetic guy, very intense guy. Actually went down to Kalamazoo last week and got to talk to him and a few of his players, and some of his players commented about how just upbeat and how much energy he brings to the table. And
32 years old.
Yeah. Yes, 32.
Yeah, youngest coach in all of major college football right there. So, and he's definitely kind of, sparking some interest in football there in Kalamazoo. He's got the little roll the bolt mantra that's going on, and you see it on the shorts, the shirts, you'll see it on the helmets. Roll the bolt's just a big thing down in Kalamazoo these days.
I tell you what, when you look at, they really brought him in to kind of change the face of the program. Like I said, he's a very fiery guy. He has a lot of passion. I think he's great for the program. I'm looking forward to seeing him out on the field. Now, I got to ask you, Brian, when you look at this season, I want you to give me a season prediction right now. Do you think it's a failure if Michigan State does not make it to the Rose Bowl this year?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's a failure, but I would definitely say it's a failure if this team does not win 8 or 9 games just based on the schedule that they have. I mean, they have, Michigan at home. The Big Ten schedule is pretty favorable coming in. I mean, you don't see Ohio State. You don't see Penn State. You don't see Wisconsin this season. So, I mean, very favorable in that aspect. And also just the early schedule that they have, starting with Western Michigan, South Florida next week, Youngstown State. I mean, really, the Notre Dame should be the first real challenge for this team. So, I mean, I would say anything less than 8 or 9 wins would be a disappointment for this team this year.
I agree.
Let's talk a little bit, Brian, about the rest of the conference here in the Big Ten. How do you see the conference shaking out?
Well, I definitely see Ohio State as just the clear-cut favorite to win this thing. You got Braxton Miller coming back as the quarterback, fifth in the Heisman Trophy voting last year. And then, I mean, if he's healthy, I mean, I have to say that this is the team to beat. But and MSU's division, and I think Nebraska, Michigan, MSU, or Northwestern could emerge out of there. I mean, it really could be a toss-up, and just depends how they fare head-to-head against each other.
Northwestern's interesting, 10-0 last year, if I remember correctly, and a whole lot of their best people back.
Yeah, won 10 games, won a bowl game for the first time in a long time last year. You know, you got the Kane Coulter back at quarterback. He's part of their two-man quarterback tandem. Vinrick Mark, the dangerous return man, and the running back's back. So they've got some nice pieces back, and, I mean, they will make things interesting in the Legends division there. So don't sleep on Northwestern, for sure.
Now, Brian, looking at today's game, again, kickoff at 8 p.m. For you, and you've been covering sports for a while now, what's the most exciting part about a home opener?
Just kind of seeing the new wrinkles that a new season brings, how players progress from year to year, and also maybe seeing some of those new players, maybe not necessarily freshmen, but players getting their first chance to play. I mean, there'll be a couple guys, kind of getting their first chance at major roles. If you look at Trey Waynes, the cornerback from Michigan State, you look at Shalit Calhoun, a defensive end. I mean, some of these guys are getting their first major chance to contribute for this team. So those things will kind of be interesting to see in the season opener.
Now, I tell you what, Brian, something that was pretty interesting to me. Now, MSU has hired a recruiting coordinator now, Curtis Blackwell. And I tell you what, he had one incredible first week on the job. What are your impressions of him right now?
Oh, well, he's very well respected in the recruiting circles. As you know, he used to run the Sound Mind, Sound Body camp that's over there in Southville that takes place during the summer, where a lot of top-notch recruits attend. So I definitely think that he will definitely kind of boost the recruiting for this Michigan State program. And as you said, like his first week on campus, Michigan State hosted a big underclassman day where they had it seems like 100 of underclassmen on campus just kind of get exposure. So I definitely think he's going to help change the recruiting for this program and kind of boost it, because especially since he's well-respected in recruiting circles.
Now, Brian, it's a discussion that we've had a lot on Current Sports these past few weeks, and I want to pose this to you. When you talk about recruiting, recruiting has become such a big phenomenon, especially over the years and over time as money has come. I mean, when you look at the world of recruiting from a high school perspective, I mean, you got some kids that are freshmen and sophomores being treated like they're celebrities. Do you think this is good for the game of football, or is it kind of take the fun out of it?
I kind of have mixed feelings about that. I mean, it's kind of exciting for those hardcore recruiting experts. And fans love the fact, you know, the recruiting. I mean, fans go crazy over recruiting stories and, you know, trying to keep up with who their team is going to get. So I kind of think it's, you know, a little bit of both. Like, you know, sometimes, you know, you're giving these, you know, young kids too much of a pedestal and, you know.
They get big-headed, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're paying attention to every little thing that they post on Twitter, and you have fans, you know, tweeting them back and forth, like, hey, come to the school I support, come to this school. And I mean, I kind of think, you know, it kind of gives you, you know, like, hey, you know, I'm wanted, you know, and kind of get this, like you said, a little big-headed. So I'm kind of have mixed feelings about the whole, you know, recruiting thing. And it's happening earlier and earlier these days. I mean, like you said, I mean, you know, Michigan State's, you know, offered some kids going into their junior year this year, and, you know, have been paying a lot of attention to some of those younger kids too. And I think, you know, that day that Curtis Blackwell was on campus, I think there might have been a middle schooler that was on campus as part of the underclassmen day too. So yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I saw the middle school age kid that was walking around the football building that day too. So yeah, it's a very interesting dynamic right there.
Gotcha. I tell you what, it's kind of like from He Got Game, Jesus Shuttlesworth.
Yeah.
You're seeing that, right?
Oh yeah.
Brian, I want to talk with you about the Michigan game here. As you look all those weeks ahead, I mean, there are some Spartans who just live for that day, right? And there's a lot of Wolverines who live for that day, too. But what do you anticipate? What kind of contest between Michigan and Michigan State this year?
Well, obviously, I think it's going to just be a low-scoring game like it was last year. I mean, you know, Michigan was able to escape that game with a 12-10 win, if I remember correctly. So definitely think it'll be very low-scoring. It's going to be interesting because Michigan is actually coming off a bye week heading into that game. So it'll be kind of interesting. You know, they have an extra week to prepare for the Spartans. But, I mean, obviously, you know, Michigan's got to come here to East Lansing to play 2 years in a row. Obviously, it's not really – it's going to be a tough place to play. You know, Michigan State has all those kind of words on their boards of things that Michigan players have said, former Michigan players have said about coming to East Lansing 2 years in a row. So, I mean, I definitely can see it being another very close game. And I think a lot of it's going to just depend on how, you know, Michigan State evolves on offense as the season progresses here. Who's under center? How, you know, if it's Andrew Maxwell, how he's progressing along. So I think that'll play a lot into that game. And also, no, Michigan, one of their better defensive players, Jake Ryan, he's out until October, so he should be back by that game. So that will make things a little bit more interesting in that game as well, too.
Well, time will tell, right, Brian?
Yeah. Plenty of games to go until that gets here.
Well, there you have it. Brian Callaway. Brian, thanks so much for joining us here on the show. I'll see you out there on the field, right?
Yeah, anytime, guys.
Thanks, Brian. Good to see you. In the background, the unmistakable sounds of the Spartan Marching Band here live from Adams Field in East Lansing. It's Mark Bayshore, Current State, and our special guest co-host Al Martin of Current Sports. We've got the band broken up, as is usually the case, into all of the various sections. We've got the baritones off here to my left. We've got a whole bunch of brass, probably the biggest group of all, in a circle on the north end of Adams Field. The drummers have finally wrapped up, but everybody is going through their pregame routine here at Adams Field in anticipation of kickoff at 8 p.m. tonight.
Yes, it is certainly rocking. All right, well, let's shift gears a little bit. I want to pose a question here. Should college athletes be paid? Now, it's a discussion that has been debated for years and has once again been amplified by stories such as that of Texas A&M quarterback Johnny Manziel, who was recently accused of getting paid for signing autographs. And then, of course, there's the Ed O'Bannon case, in which the former college basketball star, along with many other former players, is suing the NCAA in order to be compensated for the use of player names and likeness. Now, just a couple of weeks ago, during the taping of my Current Sports TV show, Spartan hoop great Greg Kelcer weighed in on the topic, and here's a clip of what he had to say.
somehow, some way, I think there needs to be some way to better accommodate those athletes for the enormous dollars that they are bringing in year after year after year, and the figures are just growing with each and every season.
Well, that was Greg Kelso doing the taping of Current Sports TV, which will air the premiere show September 12th at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Now I'm here live with Chris Solari, another sports reporter with the Lansing State Journal. First of all, thanks for joining me, Chris. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Al. It's fun to see the energy around here back after a long summer of East Lansing construction. Hard to believe it. It's done.
But can you believe it's here now? I can't believe it. It just flew by. Time is here now. We're about to kick off.
Yeah, it really did. And, I mean, this is what everybody lives for. Fans, administrators, football program, and us in the media. And this is where it jumps off. And when you look around and you see 80-some thousand people here ready for the game, that's where this money talk comes in that we were talking about. Where does all this money go? And they're not here to see us. They're here to see the football players.
Exactly. So, Chris, I got to ask you. Just heard the clip from Greg Kelso. He believes they should be paid. What's your opinion? Should college athletes get paid?
Well, I think that there's a number of different ways that you need to look at this. First of all, the abuse of the system, if it were to come into a stipend system or compensation for athletic performance, for autographs, for any of those things, there's a propensity that can be abused. And one of the things that is going to have to be highly regulated is how that money is given out. And I think probably the biggest thing, especially when you talk about the Ed O'Bannon case, one of the biggest things is likeness rights. When that's being used for video games, past and present, when it's being used for NCAA-sponsored videos of championships, athletes don't have the license to their rights. When you sign a scholarship, the NCAA tells them that they're basically giving away their rights, which I think in most courts of law, if that's anything other than the NCAA, that doesn't hold true.
Right.
So
that's wrong, basically.
And it is.
Yeah.
But the thing you worry about, there are a couple different things, like I said, with how the money is given out, who it's given to, because nobody's coming to sign cross-country autographs.
Right.
Nobody's going to buy the volleyball team jerseys. This is football and basketball, men's basketball specifically. And when you look at this, how do you keep it on a level playing field? And when you start to look at it's a lot of the reorganization within the NCAA, that's the big part of it. The big schools are the ones that rule the roost. No one's going to get Wichita State basketball
right.
or some of those other smaller schools. Some of them they
right.
are. But the reality is this is the major institutions, the one that draw the top talent that end up going to the NBA and the NFL and the NHL and all the pro leagues. So what you're going to have is a caste system, and you already do, but it's going to be more pronounced at that point. And then one of the things that people have talked about is these major schools forming another division. And the other thing that's possible is that these schools could just completely break away from the NCAA and institute their own rules. And if they do that, then you have a different system. When you can pay athletes, you can pay them a stipend, which, again, the stipend system sounds good because you hear about players not having money for food, not having money for laundry, things like that, mm-hmm. the necessities of everyday life in college. And that can be a good thing. But, again, you got to do it across the board. Title IX comes into play. Do you do it for volleyball? Do you do it for cross country? Do you do it for all the non-revenue sports? Or is this specifically men's football and men's basketball? And those are the questions that the NCAA are going to have to answer if they are going to move forward with this.
Exactly. So I want to ask you personally, what do you feel? Do you think they should be paid?
I feel that there are definite things that they should be paid for. Should they be paid for playing? No. I don't believe that that's the case. But when you talk about licensing rights, when you talk about the video games, there should be money put aside for them. I don't necessarily think it should be paid up front. I think maybe that these schools need to create some sort of coffers that these athletes can get post-graduation. When their eligibility expires,
yeah.
then they can get the money. That way it's a little more controlled and a little more regulated. Then, again, how do you dole that money out? Is Johnny Manziel's money going to be more than the six-string long snapper?
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of really dangerous issues that, that come into play with this. But personally, I think there are things that they should be, and especially with video game rights and video rights. If you're on that team, you should get a set portion set aside for you, because that money right now goes to the NCAA and it goes to the member schools.
And they're using those players' names.
That's correct.
Live from Adams Field, it's Current State on WKAR. Chris, I've got to ask you, as this topic comes up with you and just the people that you run into day after day, after week, after month, in the course of doing your job for the Lansing State Journal, how do the numbers break down? Do more people tend to agree with you? There must be some percentage of purists out there who say amateur sports has got to stay amateur, keep it clean. What are the numbers like? That's
interesting, and it's usually a pretty split number, because there are some people that do see the institutional hypocrisy in terms of the money that these schools bring in. When you're talking about a Michigan State that has an $80-plus million budget, well, that comes from football and basketball. But that money also goes to the other sports, so a lot of it. So it's not like Michigan State Athletics is pocketing all that money, too. But people do see that athletes are getting a little bit snubbed in it. But then they also say, well, they're athletes, they're getting their education paid for them. And that's their payment in this. You're here to get an education first and foremost, not to play a sport. But we all know that a lot of times when you get your top-level athletes, and it's a very small percentage, but those are the athletes that make the money, that bring in the money, that move on to those pro sports.
But, Chris, you're not talking about the kinds of sums that is really going to seriously corrupt a young person, though. Or is there that danger?
Well, it depends on what you mean by corrupt. And is it corrupting the individual? No. Is it corrupting the system and shaking the boat a little bit where there can be institutional abuse? Because one thing that you know, if you're covering athletics, coaches will try to do everything and anything within their power and sometimes beyond it to get a competitive advantage. And that's where it comes in. It's not the 18-year-old athletes. It's the abuse of the power from those coaches and those in power to continue their power.
And I guess when you talk about corrupt, I guess, Mark, it depends on the amount of money, too, I guess, too.
Right. And again, this is not a new thing. This is something that if you go back and read David Young's excellent book, Arrogance and Scheming in the Big Ten, talking about the history of Michigan State football and getting into the Big Ten. And these are issues that in the late 1890s, early 1900s plagued college sports. And that's how professional sports came out of this.
Right.
In a lot of ways is because the amateurism line was drawn up by those schools in the early 1900s, late 1800s, to prevent this, and then professional sports came in to have that town support and pride. So it's not going away anytime soon, and it won't even if legislation's passed.
I tell you what, this is a discussion, and I'm sure years and years down the line will continue to be brought up. Hey, Chris, I'll see you out there at the game, man. Always a pleasure talking to you, all right?
Thanks, Al.
No problem.
Chris Solari of the Lansing State Journal, Brian Calloway of the Lansing State Journal, many thanks to both of you and to all of our guests here on Current State. We are coming to you live this evening from Adams Field in East Lansing, which is always a center of fan, tailgating, and Spartan marching band activity. We just enjoyed our first official performance of the Spartan fight song of the entire season.
Wasn't that great?
Ago.
That was great.
It wasn't just
right
the baritone section. It wasn't just the drum section. They were actually all playing the fight song together. It was a real treat.
We staged that. We staged that right here, Mark. All right, well, we have a pretty cool story to bring you guys. Now, he's born and raised right here in Lansing. Now, Mekijah Reynolds has had many, many ups and downs with the MSU football team. In past seasons, he struggled to find out where he belongs on the squad. But now, as he embarks on his senior year, he finds himself a starter, yes, a starter, at nose tackle. Now, earlier this month, however, Reynolds was faced with a life-or-death situation that will put any challenge he's faced on the football field into perspective. Here's his account of what happened.
Long story short, a young man was shot on Saginaw 3 times. Nobody else was around. It was about 1:30 in the morning. I was about to spend the night at my friend's house, and someone at the last minute just told me, go home. So I decided to go home, and I took a route that I normally don't take, and this young man flagged me down. He had been shot 3 times. There was nobody else around. He was bleeding out pretty badly. So I whipped my car around in the middle of the street and jumped out, ran over to him and helped him out. put pressure on his wounds and stuff. He'd been shot in the head, and I mean, I still got my shirt and all my clothes over at the house that, you know, completely drenched in his blood and stuff. But, you know, thank God he made it, and, you know, that was pretty much it. You know? Yep, I mean, it was crazy, you know, this kid, young cat, teenager, and I'm holding him, cradling him, trying to, you know, put pressure and tell him, hey, it's going to be okay, everything's going to be all right. You know, he's telling me I'm dead. I'm like, look, you're not dead. You know, you're sitting here talking to me, so you're going to be fine. Just hang on. Just keep fighting. And I felt like I was, you know, spotting somebody on the bench. I was like, man, you can do it. Just relax. Keep going. You know, you got it and all that. And thankfully, he made it. I haven't really spoken to the family since I've been in camp and stuff, but he's stable and everything last time I checked. And, yeah, so I didn't get sleep for a couple of days just because, you know, it made me consider, you know, life is delicate. Life is so delicate. You know, you don't think about things like that happening until it's happened. And you know, just thinking, I'm like, what if my son would have been in that situation? Would somebody else have stopped? And, you know, thankfully he made it and everything. But it makes you consider and be thankful and so grateful and for everything that you're given. You know, I'm truly blessed to be here in the situation and that I'm in right now, playing college football at the highest level. And, you know, there's so many people that I know who didn't make it out of, you know, where they were. And so I just, you know, I think I owe it to everybody who helped me get here to, you know, to do my best and just go as hard as I can, because, you know, this stuff isn't something that I get back. And, you know, life isn't something that you get back. You don't get these days back. So that's, you know, my goal is in this camp has been to just go as hard as I can. You know, even the first couple practices, I've never been so tired and so sore after practices before. But it's just because I've been trying to go harder, and, you know, I could feel my body breaking down just so it can be built back up and be stronger for these games. And, you know, I look forward to it. Now, let me preface this. I am not perfect. I am no saint. But I you know, I believe in God. I believe he's my Lord and Savior. And I was brought up in the church when I was younger. I mean, my relationship with God is the most important thing in my life to me. I've gone to AIA camp twice out in Colorado, had the best time, met some of the best, you know, Christian athletes, and made so many friendships out there. And, you know, it's been great having so many teammates who have been, you know, in that same position, like Foe and Travis and all those guys who you can go and talk to. You know, I miss Chris Norman so much because, you know, that was like my bro. That was my counselor. If I had a problem, I had questions, I went to him. It was, you know, oh, Chris was bigger than me, way bigger. You know, he turned down the league to go to minister. But, you know, to be able to minister to people and say, hey, I made it here only because of God's, only because of God's will and mercy. I don't deserve to be here. There are other people who are more talented. But, you know, by God's grace, I was able to be here. And I'm here now playing my senior year at state. You know, planning to go to the Rose Bowl and everything. Just that's the goal, but it can't be done without them. So,
yes, that was Makaijah Reynolds. He is the starter for the Michigan State football team at nose tackle. Talking about one incredible, inspirational experience that he went through earlier this month. I mean, I tell you, Mark, when I heard that story, my jaw was on the floor. He's an unbelievable young man.
Yeah, that was a great story. Well done. We are live from Adams Field here at Michigan State University, where we have collected a couple of very intense Spartan football fans.
Yes, they are.
I'm standing next to a woman who has been a Spartan season ticket holder for how many years, Jan Holmes?
34 years.
That is quite a record.
Especially since I'm only 32.
You answered my next question. What's a typical game day routine like for you? Do you always tailgate? What do you do?
First of all, just the excitement of knowing there's a game that day. Just it doesn't matter if I tailgate or what I do. I'm there for the Spartans, the win. Always the win. But if they lose, hey, I'm still a Spartan. I'll always be a Spartan.
You're there for the next home game regardless, right?
And, Mark, I'm sitting here. I'm standing next to Roger Bleeds Green Thalen. That's quite a cliche nickname, right, Rog?
Well, that's one my friends gave me just a few minutes ago, yes.
You just got that nickname. That nickname has just been birthed, Bleeds Green Thalen.
It's his radio name.
Yes, it is.
I like that.
My real nickname is Bart.
Bart, explain that one.
Well, I was a high school quarterback, and I was a big fan of the Green Bay Packers
Bart Starr.
So most people back home would know me as Bart.
Gotcha. Now, Roger, it's the first game of the season, first Michigan State home game here. Just talk about what's your favorite part about being here, enjoying the action, just the essence of that first home game.
Well, I love the anticipation of the whole football season. My wife and I are big sports fans, and we follow the Tigers and a lot of sports teams, but college football is probably our favorite. And being season ticket holders here at Michigan State, we got kind of excited as we were making our way down the road to come here and spend time with our friends before the game. And we really enjoy that, and then we enjoy going off the game and cheering on our Spartans.
Raj, do you got a favorite memory?
I would say one of my favorite memories from Spartan football would be just attending bowl games. That's always special. And so we enjoy that, and it's a good time when your team is goes 11-2 on a season and makes it to a nice bowl game. It's a nice reward for the team and the fans.
Jan Bleeds White Holmes, you've been a season ticket holder for 34 years. I had to follow up with
that. You got to follow up with that, right?
That's right. 34 years as a season ticket holder. What's the most memorable season amongst those 34?
1988, the last time we went to the Rose Bowl, and I was there. And I just want our Spartans to get there this year because I'm getting old, guys. Come on. Let's go. Go State.
88 does seem like a long time ago. How often do you go to a bowl, to a postseason game?
I try to go to every bowl game.
No kidding.
Yep, I do. I love it.
So in recent years, have you made
yep.
all of them?
Well, I shouldn't say all of them, no.
But just about.
But I support as many as I can.
Jan, did you go last year?
To Indianapolis?
Yes.
Yes, I was there.
Wow. Wow, that's exciting.
And I just happened to be sitting in the wrong end zone.
Oh, that's always
but
a
But I was
good.
There. I was there rooting my Spartans on. I always will.
Lucas Oil Field?
Lucas Oil Field is
yes,
where it was.
I was there, too.
It was exciting.
Just fantastic.
Roger, I got to ask you, Mr. Bleed Green Thalen from Stanton, Michigan, right?
Yes,
Stanton,
sir.
Michigan. I've asked this throughout the show. Do you got a score prediction for tonight's game?
I think we got the Spartans by at least 3 touchdowns, perhaps 31-14, 31-10, something like that.
Gotcha.
And I may not be giving our defense enough credit with that kind of a prediction, but I think a lot of players will get a lot of opportunity to play tonight, so who knows what will happen in terms of the final score, but we'll get them good.
Well, I can't wait for it. I know you can't wait for it, Roger.
Right.
Thanks so much. Roger Bleeds Green Thalen from Stanton, Michigan.
And Jan Bleeds White Holmes from East Lansing, Michigan. Thanks, Jan.
Thanks,
guys. Appreciate it.
Enjoy the game tonight. Live from Adams Field, we're already hearing MSU shadows here from the Spartan marching band at Adams Field. Footballs are flying through the air.
Beautiful.
It's
beautiful.
Thinning out a little bit, and we've lost a little bit of the sun, but nobody's quarreling with that, I think, because we've lost a few degrees of that.
I hope it doesn't rain. I tell you that, Mark.
Of the temperature. But anyway, a very festive, intense evening here in East Lansing with the beginning of another Spartan football season. Curran State returns Tuesday morning following the holiday weekend. We'll explore the impact of the IRS ruling involving gay married couples in Michigan with Greg Varnum of Equality Michigan. We will also update the Syria situation Tuesday morning. Al Martin, it's been good fun. Al Martin of Current Sports, our co-host
yes,
tonight.
Yes, it has. I'm going to take off the headset, head to Spartan Stadium. Get ready, man.
Okay, the executive producer of Current State is Peter Worf. Joel Lindstroth is our producer. Thank you, Kevin Lavery, Emmanuel Berry, Matt Ludke of the Current Sports team, also to Aaron Young.